It's time for the Midwest Outdoors with Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet, the Hearing Connection in St. Joe, the Sports Medicine Store, and Sportsman's Outfitters and Marine. Now, here are Fred Ramsey and Mark Tobin.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the Midwest Outdoors. Tickling that to be with you this Saturday, and every Saturday seems about like the same time. I think that's what they call regular. As you get older, you're going to be more regular. You
know, that's important. Yes.
Very important. That voice you hear is the greatest fisherman to ever walk the face. There's my co-host, Mark Tobin. He can catch fish out of his bathtub, can't you?
I have not caught one out of my bathtub, but I have caught them out of my living room floor.
Floor.
Yes.
That's pretty challenging, wasn't it?
Yes.
And then you woke up. Is that what happened?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I've caught them in a wide variety of places. I've caught them out of my lawn, out of my garden. I've caught them out of my mom's window well in her house. I've even caught them trolling down the street.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah.
Well, Mark, I think maybe there's a counseling place downstairs here.
Right. But one thing I've never done is something that our in-studio guest, Mr. Ted Hatfield, I have never caught a fish on a half of a squirrel.
I think it was a full squirrel.
Was it a full squirrel?
Full squirrel. Was it?
But it depends on how big the squirrel is.
Yeah, really. The youngins. Tree rats.
Right.
Do you ever eat tree rat, Mark?
I do.
You have?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, squirrel?
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, it's good, isn't it?
It is. It's tough, so you got to, you know, the way that I do it, we fry it like chicken and then make a foil island and put it in a casserole dish and put water around the foil and put the squirrel pieces on top of it, then cover it with foil and then bake it, and then it'll get real super tender.
Real tender, huh?
Yep.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I wonder if it is. I don't know anybody who hunts them anymore.
I don't either.
I suppose, you know, there's some around, but I... Used to be the end thing, you know, to go squirrel hunting, you know, and now I don't know if anybody that, I guess you couldn't get any 22 shells you want to anyway.
No, that's right. I know growing up, my mom and dad make me eat things that I didn't want. It was usually spinach or something like that. And, well, I got my mom back. A good friend of ours, Bob Jones, he used to have the Hell of a Lure. Mm-hmm. It was the first plastic tube jig that ever came out. And we went over to his house in Versailles down by Lake of the Ozarks one evening for dinner. And Mom and I were there, and he made squirrel. And I didn't tell. I knew what he was making, but I didn't tell Mom. Because Mom, you know, it's like a mouse. That's a long-tailed rat.
Yeah.
She just can't.
Yeah.
So anyway, she was polite and tried to eat a bite. But it was like the more she chewed, the bigger it got.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when I had to eat that spinach.
Yeah. Kind of like last deer I had.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah, she just couldn't do it.
What a miserable vermin. Some people like deer meat.
Yeah.
I'm always amazed at people that like deer meat, you know, what the hey.
Well, now, I actually do like it.
Do you?
Yeah.
You really do?
But the thing is, most people try to make it taste like beef, and it doesn't taste like beef. It tastes like deer.
Yeah, might as well. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why fight it?
Yeah.
Yeah, the
right.
Why
yeah.
fight it type thing. What's going on below the dam, Truman? I'm supposed to ask you this.
A lot of crappie are being caught, but it's like one keeper for every 10 little ones. So a lot of small ones being caught. There's some white bass being caught. Catfish is good. Every now and then I'm hearing of some wipers, hybrids getting caught. So it's kind of good and kind of bad.
I had a guy stop me the other day and said, what about Malvern? I said, I haven't heard a word out of Malvern, not in Kansas. I said, I don't know anything about it.
The only thing I've heard is the crappie fishing is very good right now.
Yeah. That was in the doldrums out there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it seemed like it did for a while, but it's really cycled back around. And right now, if you want to catch crappie, there's still a lot of crappie. Spawning is going on, and some has happened. But there is a lot of crappie being caught right now up on the banks. And some have spawned, and they're already moving back out to their summer places. I know down at Truman, talking to Richard Bowling, our guide buddy out there, and he's fishing Main Lake Flats 12, 14 feet deep and catching post-spawn fish.
Wow.
That's where they are in the summer. So he's letting the bank fish have their way, let them spawn, and not molesting them right now.
Cool.
And going after those post-spawn fish. And so that's good. I mean, walleye, I'm hearing more and more walleye being caught. A lot of Brian Andrake, I talked to him again, and he swears he's catching these fish out on flats. And anywhere from 5
we
to
were
12 foot.
You were reprimanded.
I know.
Severely
I told him about
air.
That. He laughed.
Yeah.
Yeah. He didn't agree with that.
Yeah, I understand. Melbourne, is it going to be a walleye lake ever again?
That's a good question. I don't know. You know, I don't know. But I know that the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks, they do a lot with a, you know, limited budget. And they do a good job keeping those bodies of water stocked with walleye. And they have some natural reproduction on Melbourne as well. But, right now everything looks pretty darn good.
Hmm. You know, they had that big Cabela's walleye tournament out there, and it kind of bruised that lake.
It seemed like it. You know, that was out of Milford.
Yeah,
they did that too, and the same thing. And
that's why I meant was Milford. I said Melbourne, didn't I? Milford is what I'm talking about.
Oh yeah, Milford.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm hearing more and more walleye being caught, but yeah, it seemed like it just took forever to rebound from that.
Yeah. Well, walleye are temperamental, I think, and hard to raise.
Seems like we just don't have the right set of conditions around here for them to really thrive. Now, Stockton is, you know, Stockton has a lot of walleye in it, and the Kansas lakes do pretty good. Nothing like it seems like the northern waters, but they sure are tasty.
I wonder, the guys all go up to Minnesota A and North Dakota A and catch walleye. I mean, what is the difference?
Yeah.
I mean, they catch walleye up there.
The water's a lot cooler and got deeper water. I don't know if that has anything to do with it. I'm not a walleye expert by any means, but there's definitely a difference. But, boy, I tell you, Brian, he's catching a lot of walleye out there right now.
Mm.
And some nice walleye in the 6 and 7 pound range.
Ooh, that'll work.
Yeah.
Get a flay off.
A lot of eaters, a lot of those 2 and 3 pound fish.
Yeah. I talked to a guy fishing Clinton. He caught into some walleye, but they were all, I think he had to be 15 inches, if memory serves me correctly.
Right.
And I think they were all like 14s and 13s.
Nice.
And they caught 124.
Oh, wow.
But,
Trolling for them right now is kind of the preferred method. Brian's doing a couple things. Now, I know I like to troll flicker shad or bandit crankbaits. Those are both good crankbaits for walleye. If that doesn't work, you might slow down and use a bait rig, maybe drift a nightcrawler or a leech.
I don't know. Live bait and me don't get along at all. If I can't catch them something artificial, I don't want much to do with it, you know. I don't do trolling either. All my friends all troll.
Yeah, that's not my favorite thing to do.
It's about as boring as watching paint dry.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
It's a good way to get walleye.
Yeah, and you're going to put some fish in the boat. You know, if you're hungry, you know, darn it, try it.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, but.
I'd
we'll
do
see.
About anything to get a walleye. Oh, did you hear about that lady that caught a 3.5 pound crappie out of Lake of the Ozarks?
Whoa.
Fishing with a cork. I think just a foot deep or whatever. But, oh, my gosh, it's a beautiful.
That's a huge crappie.
It's a huge. Out of Lake of the Ozarks.
Lake of the Ozarks.
You don't hear a 3 pound fish get caught out of Lake of the Ozarks very often.
Too much pressure.
Yeah.
I think.
And easy accessibility. There's no place on that lake for the fish to get away.
Yeah.
You know, there's docks on every inch of that lake.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 3.5 pounds.
That's a big fish.
Yeah.
Then they capture, 200-pound surgeon?
Oh, that's it.
100-year-old fish in a Detroit river, of all places.
Wow, over maybe 100 years old.
He was wearing a hubcap, he said.
Wearing a hubcap.
Some
bling.
Yeah, around his neck. You know. But can you imagine that fish, 100 years old, how many hooks went by him in his career?
Did it say how long that was?
6.5 foot.
Good gosh.
That's a big fish, isn't it?
That's a that's a dinosaur.
It is. 100 years ago.
Crazy.
Fish spawned. Hmm. I mean, isn't that crazy?
And cool.
I don't know anything about the Detroit River. I mean, is it fished hard? I don't know. I don't know anything about it at all. I don't think I've ever read about it. And the only thing I ever read was the negative side of it on the pollution, but I think they pretty well addressed that, the way I understand the deal. So, I don't know. Boy, that's a big fish. Yeah. If you caught that Tobin, it would be the end of your career. You'd fall over dead.
It would be. Oh, Greg Thompson just sent me a picture of that the lady with her crappie.
Yeah.
We'll put that. Greg, if you would put that up on our Facebook.
I'm from Missouri. You got to show me. You think it really was caught there?
Well, I mean, there's a dock right
there. Oh, yeah.
Right there.
Docks all over the United States.
Yeah. But that's a monster.
Well, that is. That's the biggest crappie I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah, that's a dandy.
Out Lake of the Ozarks.
Whoa, man. I wonder how old that fish is.
Probably,
3-year-old?
No, it's probably five.
Five?
Let's see. I've got a growth rate chart here. I just happen to have this.
Ooh.
A 1-year a one-year-old crappie is 4 inches long. A 12-inch fish is a pound, and that's a three-year-old fish. So a three-pound fish is 17 inches long, so that'd be probably 6 years old.
Six-year-old crappie.
Yeah, that's amazing. On Lake of the Ozarks, one eluded fisherman for that long.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
That is amazing.
It was 3.8 pounds.
Wow. That's a big fish. I don't care who
you are. On a cork. Can you imagine? Yeah. Oh, my gosh, how fun. I love catching fish on a bobber.
Oh, yeah, I know something about it.
I just never get tired of it. Yeah. I love it. But, God, can you imagine pulling that thing up?
Unbelievable. In the studio with us, we have Ted Hatfield with Hatfield Gun Company, and he's still alive. I know a lot of you people had bets that he would crash the airplane and be gone by now, but somehow he's muttered through life with his airplane. Have you had any bad experience with your airplane, Ted?
I probably shouldn't even be talking about this on the airplane. You know, my son-in-law, you know, he's wanting to learn flying and whatever. So I've found a little grass strip up in the bottoms up there on a place called Boo's Island, which, you know, kind of drew me to it. Right.
Yeah,
on,
right.
But it's just a little grass strip next to a levee. And so I took him and I had him in the right seat. I said, you can go ahead and fly, you know. And it was a lot of fun because I got to save our life within a millisecond on several occasions there.
Yeah.
He tried to land that airplane. So yeah, I've been having fun with it.
Well, it's a controlled crash.
Oh, yeah, I know.
That's all it is. Yeah. I mean, you just don't crash as hard. You come down, you just don't crash as hard.
Right, yeah.
You sent me a video about 2 weeks ago where a guy tips the wing down, and it's looking good. He's coming in fine.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, I think he panicked, maybe, I don't know, or bounced it, and then got up, and boy, that was a mess.
Well, he was letting his girlfriend fly that plane.
Oh.
Which, there's a problem right there.
There you go. Yeah.
And that was the first time they flew it. A friend of mine went out there and delivered it, and that little Super Cub is like $175,000.
Wow.
The first time they flew it, he let her make the approach, and she set it down. And you can see they're lose control, and it starts to ground loop. And this guy comes on with the throttle and tries to pull it off, and, well,
the millisecond didn't work. The millisecond didn't work in that occasion.
No, got him on that one.
Well, what the hey. Hey, I saw I don't know what was going on. There were three or four stacked on a rack on the back of a truck, and they were Jackson kayaks.
Oh, wow.
And I read something about the Jackson kayak sales are up like 80%.
Oh, my gosh. Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Well, people are, you know, this started with the quarantine last year, and a lot of people rediscovered the outdoors. And that's one great way to do it is with a kayak, especially, you know, we're our part of the country.
Uh-huh.
There are so many little city and county lakes between Kansas and Missouri. I mean, several hundred of them. And a lot of them are not accessible with a boat and motor. So the best way to fish them is with a kayak.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Joe Falco over there at Sportsman's Outfitter, he took on Jackson Kayaks, and he could have picked any line that he wanted, but he wanted Jackson because they've got a reputation for being one of the most stable. And if you're just recreationally kayaking, you know, that's not as important as it is if you're fishing. So if you're into fishing and you want kayaks, go out there and check those. He's got a good supply of them out there right now. But what a great way to enjoy the resources that we have here in Kansas and Missouri is with those Jackson kayaks.
Yeah.
And they also, Dave Hemme, he's the head mechanic out there. If you've got a mechanical problem with your boat, which eventually you will, I mean, that's just the nature of the beast, not a better place to take your boat to have it fixed than Sportsman's Outfitter Marine. They're out in Belton, last Belton exit. I got to tell you, this is the joke of the day from Sportsman's Outfitter Marine.
Oh.
Ted, you can appreciate this. There was a fisherman that was eating at a restaurant, and he was eating by himself, and there was a gorgeous redhead sitting in a booth next to him, and he couldn't help but check her out. Well, all of a sudden, she sneezed, and her glass eye came flying out of its socket toward him. So he reached out instinctively and grabbed it and gave the eye back to her. Well, she's mortified. She's so embarrassed. And she said, please, let me buy your dinner to make up for this. So they sit together and have dinner, and they just have a great time. Well, they decide to go out after dinner. They go to a theater. They have some drinks, just have a great time. She invites him back to her place, and she said, why don't you spend the night with me? We'll have a great breakfast in the morning. So they do, and he has a wonderful, you know what I mean, a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. Gets up next morning, has a gourmet meal, and he says to her that after this great breakfast, he said, "You are like the perfect woman. Do you treat all guys like this?" And she said, "No, never. This is the first time. It's just that you happen to catch my eye."
Where's our drum roll?
Didn't even deserve it on that one.
Yeah, too early for that one, wasn't it? You happened to catch my eye.
Sorry about that.
You're listening to the Midwest Outdoors for the last time. We got to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. I've got a little bit of an announcement here, and if I didn't do this, Joe Locamper would hit me right in the eye, which he would be justified to do. I mean, Joe Locamper, Mound City, Missouri, has been the backbone of that community, as far as I'm concerned, for a long, long time. He's just a great human. Had Locamper Motors up there forever, and he's kind of a living legend, as we say. Nobody talks about when he was such a basketball star. He was recruited by NBA, and he decided, no, I made that up. He wasn't really recruited, but he was a good basketball player. But to free trap shoot today from 1 to 4.
Oh, wow.
Free, F-R-E-E.
Really?
The Missouri Department of Conservation is even furnishing free shells and the sporting clays.
What? Well, how cool.
Archery will present it. Rhonda Wiley is going to demonstrate her championship dog.
Wow.
Let's have a howl for the dog. And so if you're out kicking around, this is in coordinate with the Ducks Unlimited. And they'll have raffles and drawings and things of that nature also. And I think they're going to raffle or pull a ticket on one gun today. So if you're out kicking around and you want to shoot for free, how about Mound City, Missouri, just west of the McDonald's there, out where the Tractor Pull Arena is. And it's really taken off. I already sold $1,000 worth of advanced raffle tickets already.
Wow.
So go support DU. They raise ducks, and they're a good organization. So go out there and see Joe and pat him on the back. Say hello. How are you, Joe?
How fun.
Oh, yeah.
And it's free.
Yeah. You can't hardly beat that.
Where's that at?
At Mound City, Missouri. It's a Tractor Pull Arena just west of the McDonald's there a little bit. Out in the river bottom there. Can't hardly miss it, you know, type thing. I hate that when somebody says you can't miss it. It's right down there on the corner. You can't miss it. Okay. Yeah. About 2 miles down the road, you go, oh.
I missed it.
Yeah, I missed it. And the deal. So what the hey, you know. Ted Hatfield is here, Hatfield Shotgun Company. What's going on in the shotgun world right now? Are you still selling those fast? You can bring them in?
You know, Fred, this is just crazy. I mean, I've been in this business my entire life, and I've never seen anything like this. And just, for instance, Sports South, they're the largest
sure.
distributor in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I know those guys, a family-owned operation, and, you know, good folks. And just kind of trying to keep keep in touch with the market and what's really
sure.
what happened. I called them the other day, and I said, "Is this market cooling down any?" And his answer was, "Hell no."
No.
He said,
no.
"We can sell anything we get in here."
Yeah.
And if you go in, I went to Cabela's the other day. I wanted to buy a case of trap loads. We're going to go test some guns and stuff like that. And I couldn't find them in the store. And I grabbed one of the guys, and I said, "Where's the trap loads? I want to buy a case of trap loads." He said, "We haven't got any 12-gauge shotgun shells except a few boxes of double-aught buck." You know,
wow.
This is crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, where is the end? I mean, surely, maybe not. I don't know. You know, what's going on? I mean, are people running scared, or what's going on?
I tell you what, in my opinion, I don't know. But in my opinion, when they come up and they say, "We're going to defund the police," and you see these riots where they're burning people's buildings and stuff mm-hmm. like that, people get scared and they go out there and buy a gun.
Yeah. I had a very good neighbor lived up the street. He passed since this conversation. But he said, "Boy, I think I'm going to buy a gun." He said, I'm very anti-gun. And he said, I think I'm going to buy a gun.
Yeah.
I'm running scared.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's it, you know, in a nutshell. We don't think about it.
Yeah.
We've had shotguns our entire life and whatever. You know,
yeah.
We go hunting. But there's people, I mean, the people who are buying them, you know, are a lot of the liberal left go out there and they're going
sure.
out there and buying guns. They're not telling anybody. But
they're going out to...
they said in the market this past year, there were over 2 million new gun buyers.
Wow.
2 million.
Jeez.
So, wow.
You know, just crazy.
Wow. Your shotgun at, is sometimes available at Walmart. They seem like they hit the rack and they're gone.
Yeah.
You can't believe the people have called me and said, I've been looking for a Hatfield forever and ever and ever. Can't find one on the thing.
Yeah.
And I talked to the clerk up there at the Walmart that day, and he said, yeah, I know the gun. He said, but we don't, you can't fall in love with them because they're sold.
Yeah, yeah, you know, as I told you, Fred, I wanted to get, we were making a 3.5-inch duck gun. So I called my partner, and I said, hey, have the factory send over three of them, you know, for you and I and Mark. Mm-hmm. And his answer was no.
He can't even get them.
I can't even get one.
I think that goes back to marketing and management, but I'm not going to go there. You know.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do they? What is your best-selling semi-automatic shotgun? Is it what model and what? What's the name?
It's called an SAS, Hatfield SAS, and they're available at Walmart. And 12-gauge semi-automatic's got a walnut stock, checkered, comes with three chokes, rib, the whole bit. You know, it's a nice gun.
What's suggested retail?
I think at Walmart they're selling them for $220, something
wow,
like that.
That's wow, that's unbelievable. Really unbelievable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is this a gas-driven gun?
Yeah, it's a pretty standard gun. I mean, we didn't invent anything here. But you got to remember, I mean, this is just like an automobile. This thing has to work. You know, we can't sure get these back. The margins on all this are real, real slim. And if we get one gun back, you know, that's the profit on three or four guns. So these things absolutely work. You know, they're a good gun.
If, and which I'm not hearing anything about this, but if they break, I mean, is there a warranty on this gun?
Absolutely. You know, you call us up, we take care of you.
Okay.
And, in fact, what we do, you know— We give the proverbial triple R warranty. We'll repair it, replace it, or refund your money.
One of the three. Can't hardly beat that.
No.
For
no
that kind of money.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know,
that's
insane.
I mean, how could you go wrong?
Well, I tell people, hell, buy two, you know. Yeah. One of them wears out, you got another
yeah,
one.
Yeah, exactly. Buy four if you can get your hands on
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right.
You know, I talked to that clerk, and the guy knows guns. This guy uh-huh here at Walmart knew guns.
Uh-huh.
And he said, you can't fall in love with the gun because he said it sits on the shelf about an hour and it's gone.
You know what's fun, Fred, is we're doing not only a 12-gauge, we do a 20 and a 28-gauge.
Wow.
Really?
And a 410.
Wow.
I mean, make the whole bit. And let alone 28-gauge. You know, it's a small receiver and all that kind of stuff. And no recoil to it. That's a fun gun. Too bad the quail have gone extinct because they had to go shoot them with that.
I think I heard a quail the other day, but I wasn't sure. Well, mm-hmm, I was turkey hunting. Not a deal. Over and under shotgun?
We make those too. Those go not to Walmart. Those go to other sporting goods stores.
Mm-hmm.
They're all distributed by Sports South there, so I don't know where all you can find them. But, you know, even the little shop up there in St. Joe, they've got some guns up there.
What? where are these guns made at?
In Turkey.
In Hooglu, is that the name? No,
it's another little village. It's in a little village called Uzmalu up in Turkey. Uzmalu. I lived over there for years, and really good folks. Now, they're, you know, it's the proverbial 4,000 people live in this village, and everybody works at the factory, you know, and a lot of handwork goes into this.
Sure.
I mean, it's really, really skilled stuff, you know, but they do a great job.
Well, I tell you what, the guys, we had them in the blind.
Mm-hmm.
And wonderful product. I mean, it just functioned, shot good on the deal. It amazes me is the gun shoots where you're looking. I mean, people don't understand that when I make that statement. The gun's got to shoot where you're looking.
Yeah.
I'm amazed at people that don't take the time, what I call zero in your shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were doing the American Outdoors when we had a sponsor, and I can't remember the name, and I'd tell you if I remember it. They sent us some shotguns, and they're brand new, pretty. Oh, boy, pretty. You know, one of them gold-plated-looking engraved things. Gun shot a foot low at 30 yards.
Yeah, I tell you, people ought to go out on a pattern board. I told you about building this, designing these new ribs that mm-hmm. we were working on. First thing we did after we got these finished, I thought I had everything right. And we've got an engineer. I mean, we had the math on this and all. went out there and shot it, and we were about 3 inches low.
Wow.
On the pattern. And that's shooting close, you know, and not backing off 30 yards, because if you're low, say, at 30 feet, well, you know, multiply that.
Amplifies.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah.
Wow. How do you correct it?
You actually, you're taking off the rib.
Taking off the rib.
The rib is a taper. And honestly, if you look at a shotgun, it tapers down.
Sure
the barrel.
Does. Uh-huh.
And that is actually will converge and change at 40 yards. So you're dead on at 40 yards there. And the, you know, high or low.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how ribs are. That's why they're designed that way.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting.
I did not know that. Interesting.
Ted Hatfield is our guest, Hatfield Shotgun Company. Basically, you got an office here in Kansas City?
No, I've got a different company here in Kansas City.
Well, anyway, if you're looking for a gun and in the market, which who isn't, stop by your local Walmart and take a look at these guns. I think you'll fall in love with them. I wouldn't know why you wouldn't. It goes bang.
Yeah.
And the price is right.
Yeah, and the price is right.
Yes.
And then if you pull the trigger again, it goes bang again. And if you pull the trigger again, it goes bang again. I'd be, wow. You know, I'm impressed. That's all it takes to impress me. And the deal. Hey, we are brought to you by King City Lumber Company, kingcitylumber.com. If you guys are in the mood for an outbuilding, whether it be a place for your combine, your horsey, your loafing shed, whatever you're in the mood, a new garage in your backyard, these are master craftsmen. These are the finest people you'll ever do business with. Marty and Money Tungst are the good people left in America, the people you can trust. And when they get ready to go home, when they get your garage finished or your outbuilding, they will look you right in the eye and say, you need anything else? Is anything wrong? You want us to correct anything? This is the kind of people you do business with. KingCityLumber.com. Go to their website. Take a look at their products. If you don't see what you like, they'll help you design one also. KingCityLumber.com. Hey, what you're listening to, the Midwest Outdoors. Going to take a little break. We'll be right back with you. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. If you're just joining us, this is the Midwest Outdoors. All three of our listeners are present, and in the studio with us, we have Ted Hatfield of Hatfield Gun Company. Before we get back to the show, I'm going to talk to you about SARS pistols. Now, I talked to Todd Pearson, who runs SARS, Tuesday, I believe it was. He said, keep up the good work. They're starting to fill the pipeline up a little bit. If you've been waiting for one of these pistols, it should be there real quick. There's nothing like them. I take this gun out. I've learned a hard lesson with this pistol. If I take 40 rounds, I shoot 40 rounds. If I take 100 rounds, I shoot 100 rounds. So I just limit myself to a box when I go to the range. But what's funny about this is I pulled up to the pistol range, and a lot of people know me now, and they come over and want to look at this gun, and they want to shoot it. And I bring 20 rounds. Before I could get it back, I got 5 left. You know, it's okay. You know, purposely, this K9 that I have, this K12, excuse me, that I have is, I have a 9 too, but the K12 has not been cleaned. I think I'm probably up to 500 rounds in it, maybe a little more than that. I've not cleaned it on purpose, and it's still functioning. So if you're in the mode for a pistol, where did they get the other one here the other day? It was somewhere.
It was Harrisonville Gun Shop down at Hillsdale, Kansas.
Hillsdale. They had 3 in stock, didn't they?
3 or 4, yeah.
And a guy, a friend of yours, bought one.
Yeah, Dean Wanniger, great guy.
Mm-hmm.
He bought one down there.
Do you remember what he paid for it?
$280,
$289 or something, whatever it was.
I mean, way less than
a
Glock or anything like that.
Yeah, you know, Fred, that SAR 9. That gun looks, for all intents and purposes, looks a whole lot like a Glock. But it just feels better and shoots better.
It does.
Yeah, that's a hell of a pistol.
Yeah. The guy I shot with had, I forgot what he told me the number now. I'm old and forgetful, but a lot of pistols, 100 or whatever it was. And he said, I've never shot anything like this. He said, this is the gun of choice now. Hmm. So he was trying to get a hold of it. I haven't talked to him now for 60 days or so, 30 days. But I tell you what, I can't say enough good things about this gun. You know, they take that gun, throw it in the mud, and stomp it up and down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And try to make it not work. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, right.
Freeze it to way below zero, tried to make it not work. I mean, they won the NATO test with it. I can go on and on and on. Then now it's won this national award, which even made them hotter than they were. But please bear with us, because they're getting them. They're getting them in. But it's just, the demand is off of the chart. Got some really, really good press on the deal. So, Ted Hatfield is with us. And when me and Ted get together, we talk a little bit about shotguns and guns. We're both in love with shotguns. And I like rifles, too, but I like shooting shotgun more. There's no doubt about this on the deal. But there's a line in the movie with John Wayne said, "Martha, get me the greener."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you know what a greener is, Mark?
No, I don't.
It's used to, well, I guess we would classify it as a stagecoach gun.
Well, they were. They were a real favorite in the Old West because they were actually higher quality. They were a better gun than anything that was made. And there were a lot of guns that were coming into the, you know, into the market at that time that were being made, like in Belgium and whatever, of lower quality. But if you had a greener, well, you had a good gun.
That was a cat's meow, huh?
Uh-huh.
That was it, huh?
Yeah, you know, it really was better. The people don't know, but it was W.W. Greener. Now, that actually stood for William Wellington Greener, and English fellow, you know. And his father was actually an apprentice of Joseph Manton. Now, Joseph Manton's other apprentices was one guy by the name of Purdy.
Oh.
And I think the Holland brothers. You know,
wow.
I mean, he was the absolute master. Well, at any rate, the old man Greener, he wouldn't make a cartridge gun when those started, when the first cartridges were. He said, you know, it'll never catch on.
That's a bad phase.
Yeah. So his son finally got pissed and quit. And started W.W. Greener, you know, away from the old man. And he actually made the first cartridge double-barrel shotgun.
Wow.
And did that in 1869. You know?
Wow.
And then went on to do such other things. He invented the ejectors. He was, the first one to make choked barrels. I mean, you know, he's pretty much the master of it. So if you had a greener, yeah, you had a hell of a gun.
Greener was also, I mean, the original Greeners were from England.
Yes.
And then, now there was a W.W. Greener in America too, wasn't there?
No. No, it has always been England, and they're still in business.
They are.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
huh. Yeah, I guess they trace it back to 1829, you
Edward.
Know.
Wow.
And they're still in business today. Of course, you know, it's kind of a matter of do I want a greener or do I want a new Mercedes?
Yeah, that's about what I forgot to think. I read quite a bit about this, and now I do know that there were some guys that infringed on their patents. I know that there were some people that knocked off a gun and stamped it with greener.
Oh, yeah. I think there were a lot of counterfeits.
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted that greener name,
you know,
especially out west out there, you know.
And so you got, if you're going to buy one for a collection, which I found one. In Falls City, Nebraska, of all places. Well, I got to looking into it and got numbers. It was a knockoff.
Ah, wow, really?
It was a fake. It was a switcheroo. And the guy that owned it, and I was in the mode, and I had to go back and tell him, I said, listen, you really don't have a greener.
Right.
And, yeah. Oh, boy, he got hot at me.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I don't blame him, but, yeah. You know, it was a knockoff.
Oh, yeah.
On
the
deal. And then I read so much about this. I was really into this for a while, trying to find one. And they had a saddle ring that, you know, something went on the side of the gun. Well, that's not a true greener.
No.
You know, that was allegedly made. It was a greener company out of New York or somewhere that made one for Wells Fargo or something. And
right. Yeah, and, well, Wells Fargo did, you know, get some real greeners. You know, I mean, they had some good guns. But, of course, they had lots of bad guns, too.
Oh,
you know,
sure.
It's whatever. Whoever's riding shotgun, here, take this, you know.
Now, are these case-hardened? I mean, what are these?
You know, they're a box lock action, which means, you know, the entire mechanism is within the receiver, as opposed to side locks, you know, where the entire working mechanism are two plates that go in either
two
side.
Two plates, yeah. What do you know about case hardening? I mean, it's my understanding is it's like an art.
Oh, it is. I Yeah, Fred, when I was trying, there's no book. You can't go out and buy a book on
how to do this. I tried to research this.
And, you know, I experimented with it and talked to some old guys that are supposed to know something. Damn near burned my shop down trying to get
that surprises me. Not.
What it's done with is it's animal bone charcoal and what they call pea charcoal, which is hardwood charcoal that comes from Missouri, believe it or not. I think even the English import these bags of charcoal from Missouri.
Wow.
It's that special charcoal. You mix this together, you blend it together, then when they what they call it, when they say case hardening, you actually pack the, let's say, the gun receiver in a steel case with the charcoal all around it, and you put it into a kiln. Now, the old-timers, they put it right in a forge, you know, sure. and fire it up sure. until it get hot. And you get it up to, you know, damn near cherry red, that kind of color. And then you knock the lid off this case and dump it into water.
Cold water.
Just cold water. And it comes out with all of those mottled colors of blues
Beautiful.
And grays and reds and whatever, you know, that you see. I mean, that's color case hardening, yeah.
So nobody's got a procedure to guarantee that the color is the same?
No, you know, honestly, I really did find an old guy that knew about this, an old guy named Oscar Gaddy, it's dead, and I spent a lot of time with him, and him showing me how to do that. And he could reproduce the colors, you know, on like the old Parker shotguns or an L.C. Smith or Purdy's, you know, the English guns, whatever. He knew how to do it, and he showed me, but I ain't telling.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty neat stuff.
So, but he could get as consistent with it?
Yeah.
Now, my understanding, I read a lot about this, and it's something about the makeup of the chemicals that you're putting in it. I mean, it's no guaranteed coloration. That was what I came away with.
It's the matter of the concentration of the bone charcoal, which is pure carbon, and the pea charcoal, which is hardwood. You know, that mixed together, whatever the blend is. And then there's a way of being able to keep the charcoal on it clear into the water, under the water. Because if it falls off before it hits the water, then it's contaminated by the air, and all you get is kind of a gray color.
Wow.
Interesting.
Amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
We got to tell the story every time we tell the story. Me and Ted were at the SHOT Show, I believe in Dallas that year, and we're walking down in the cheap seats down below everybody else.
Well, that's where I had my booth.
Yeah,
I remember. Where the deer rattler horns and the turkey call.
The oozing, dripping leaves.
Yeah.
I never forget that one either. And we're walking down to there, and I look down the aisle. Of course, there's a thousand aisles down there, it looks like, you know. And I said, "It's Wesley Richards." And Ted said, "Nah, he wouldn't be here." So we sauntered down there. Take it from there.
Fred and I walked up there. And here is this Britisher, you know. I mean, he's in starched shirt and tweeds and all that, you know, ramrod straight back. And there's these two Texans talking to him, and they were talking about a self-cocker as opposed to a cocking shotgun. What it is, you know, Fred, when you break open a shotgun, it falls open with the weight of the barrels. But you got to give it just a little bit more before it ejects. Okay. But that's cocking the gun, see? And so when you close it, it's ready to go. A cocking shotgun is like a Purdy, where when you hit the lever, it drops open, ejects the shell, and then it's stiffer closing. So it cocks when you close it. And these guys were asking this guy, you know, what his opinion was on the advantage of one to the other. And in his best British way, he had this kind of sneer, you know, the British have been perfected Probably. For talking to the unwashed masses out there. And he said, "Well, actually, who loads one's own shotgun anyways?" Because if you got a lot of money and you're buying a shotgun in England, you buy two of them. They're sold by the brace because you're loader. You know, you shoot and then hand it back to your loader, you know, and he loads it.
Now, this has got merit for you, Tobin. Here's what we're going to do. Now, next time you get snagged, you're going to have a bearer behind you, and you just hand in the rod, and he hands you a reloaded one, and away you go.
I like that idea,
too. I've given that a
lot
of gray matter.
Although, I've been the loader. You know, that usually I take my kids out, and that's how
you
it
are
is.
The loader?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Now, then, the other time I get around you, and everybody after the radio show, I'll probably get calls on this one too, but Wesley Richards. Everybody wants to know, where in the world did you come up? I mean, who is this company? What are they about? Where, I mean, what goes on there?
Well, they're one of the old British best-grade gun companies. And to have a best-grade shotgun, it has to have hand-removable locks. You know, you actually have to be able to remove the mechanism when you're out there on the driven shoot with the Queen or whatever, that kind of thing. Yeah. And Wesley Richards locks drop out of the bottom of the gun. And they're really, really kind of unique. It kind of looks like a box lock, but the locks drop out the bottom. And, you know, Wesley Richards, I don't know what they go for. Probably someplace between $120,000
and $150,000.
Good God. Nice little shotgun.
Wow.
Well, you got to buy two now.
Yeah, right.
And it's no different than Hatfield. When you pull the trigger, it goes boom.
Yep. Same thing.
Same thing.
Yeah.
Wow.
I got to hunt with a gentleman who had one. And he let me look at it, and he dropped the block out. It was like a Rolex watch on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
It was so precision, so unbelievable.
Oh, they're beautiful things.
Beautiful piece of equipment on the deal. Mm-hmm. Now, are they still cooking around? I mean,
yeah, as far as I know, all of those companies are still in business.
Huh.
You know, Wesley Richards, and, of course, there's Purdy and Holland. I mean, those are the big makes, you know, that everybody recognizes.
Yeah,
and Greener, for that matter. I mean, they're still in business.
Honestly,
in the British high gun trade, Greener is not as well known, you know, as like Wesley Richards.
Yeah.
But one thing, I don't know whether you know this, Fred, a little bit of trivia that keeps clogging my brain up, keeping me from being intelligent, is Wesley Richards also, or I mean, Greener also made whaling cannons.
Gotta have one of those.
And the thing is, if you're actually going out to shoot a whale, which I guess they do still occasionally, these things are still in operation.
What in the world?
I don't know if we needed that information, but it's good to have.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder what kind of ammunition that would shoot.
I don't know. They shoot a great big harpoon. I mean, maybe it's the Japanese that are still shooting these things, but... And next time you're on a whaling ship, you can walk over and go, oh, is that a Greener? You know?
That'd impress them. Not a deal. The ultimate shotgun, in your opinion. Whose is it? Is it Purdy?
Probably, you know, James Purdy. He also apprenticed under Joseph Madden. Started his own company. And his gun is unique in that it is a cocking shotgun. You hit the top brake lever, it drops open and ejects the shells. And they kind of set a standard, you know, of great guns. A lot of people would argue that Holland's better.
Sure.
And I don't know. I mean, it's just whatever your taste is, you know. But if I had my pick, I'd go with Purdy.
And I look at them online every once in a while, and I'm shocked at the prices. Especially, they make an elephant gun, a double rifle.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they'll make anything for you. They used to make double rifles for hunting in Africa. You know, that kind of thing.
Do you know what Ernest Hemingway shot?
You know, I really don't, but I think it was a Holland. Now, Holland was very big on side-by-side double rifles, you know, for African big game, and a little bit more so than Purdy. But he may have shot that, or he may have actually shot a, what am I thinking about, a Rigby.
A Rigby?
You remember.
Sure.
They're still around.
Yeah, they're still around.
Yeah.
You can still buy. But I get on that website, English Guns for Sale, $250,000 for these guns, $250,000 for an elephant gun.
Yeah.
They got a nice case it comes with. You know, for $250,000, they probably ought to.
I mean, how many times would you shoot it? I mean, you buy a box of shells, and then there are 20 elephants in the box.
Really? I don't know. You know, I watched a special. I got thinking about you there, and I watched a special on Ernest Hemingway. Kind of a dirtbag.
honestly, my opinion of Hemingway, he was very successful, and he got the Nobel Prize, all that. It seemed to me like he was really good at marrying up. You drop this one, you know, get another woman that's a little more expensive.
Went through
five,
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was a hell of a self-promoter.
Yeah, boy. So, yeah. The people that were around him on a special despised him.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And he had his own entourage that kind of followed him around, especially during World War II when he was over there covering that thing and the deal. But, you know, the old man of the sea, you know, what a classic. I mean, they made that into a movie. And
Well, you know, people don't know this, but in fact, Mark, you'd like this. Yeah, fishing story, of course. you know, everybody remembers the old man in the sea, you know, and the sharks are coming in and they're biting at this big marlin that's strapped to the side of the boat, and they take a knife and they tie it around an oar, you know, and they're stabbing the sharks and all that. If you get a chance, you can find it on the internet, I'm sure. Go to the first 1,000-pounder, and it was by who's the guy that wrote Riders of the Purple Sage and all that.
Oh God, you're beyond me. Can't help you on that one.
Well, I'll think of about 2 in the morning. I'll call you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
But at any rate, God, what's his name? At any rate, that guy, he was really the father of big game fishing. And he went off to Tahiti, you know, in like 1925 or something. He and another guy put their boats on a big steamship and had them taken down there. And he caught the first 1,000-pound marlin.
Wow.
And, of course, they had to just tie it on the side of the boat. And as they're trying to get in, here come the sharks.
Sure.
You know, all Makos coming up there trying to bite the tail off that thing. And he's got a description of them tying a knife to the oar and all that. I mean, it's just exactly like that.
A little plagiarism, maybe, would you think?
Well, no, I think he used that for an inspiration. He's big time on fishing, you know.
Yeah, Well, I tell you what, Hemingway is an amazing human.
Oh, yeah.
But here, I'm researching him a little bit more. Ernest Hemingway, everybody talks about all the big books he had out. Nobody talks about his failures. He had lot of books that nobody wanted to pick up and read. They were just total disasters on the thing, you know.
Yeah.
But, boy, the guy was just bigger. He lived life to the fullest.
Oh, man, yeah.
And shot a lot of chuckers, shot a lot of quail. I mean, he went everywhere hunting all over the world, you know. The guy was bigger than real life, you know, and his big thing was the Cape Buffalo charging him, you know, and shooting him between the eyes at point blank and that kind of stuff. But what a strange human.
Yeah, who I was thinking of is Zane Grey.
Yeah.
You know, and Zane Grey wrote dime novels to pay for his fishing jones, because that's all he wanted to do is go fishing.
All right, Tobin, there's your chance.
I need to start writing.
Yeah. Your dime novels, then. Yeah. You know. Yeah, them days are all over with. What the hay and the deal.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, it was very interesting to watch that special.
Oh,
and
man,
I hope they run it again, because I want to watch it again. That's how good it was on the deal.
I heard about it and I missed it. You know, I don't watch much television anyway, but I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
And I don't know whether everybody knows this, but he really learned his writing skill as a reporter for the Kansas City Star.
Exactly.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he sure did. He got terminated, though, I think, at the Kansas City Star. I think he got terminated a lot of places that he wrote.
Well, I think Kansas City Star is known for firing a lot of really good writers.
Brent didn't get fired. Brent just gracefully went out the door. But, man, I'll tell you what, Kansas City Star, you know, there was a lot of famous people came through the Kansas City Star.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, people don't realize what a big newspaper that was.
Oh, it was the cat's meow, as they say, at one time or another on the deal. So, I was going to ask you, you've done some shark fishing in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I went out and saw Ted. We went out to one writing for Sports Field, wasn't it?
Yeah, I was working for Sports Field out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, quite honestly, Fred, you or I'd understand this. In L.A., you got to drive for days to get out of the city.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crammed in there.
Yeah.
I can't do that. You know, I got to get out.
Yeah.
And I fell in with these guys fishing for Mako sharks. And Makos, they are a blue water shark. They're out there. They don't feel right unless they've got about 5,000 feet of water underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way I've heard them described is they're like a great white shark on amphetamines.
Oh. Did you have to go out far to get them?
Well, yeah. You know, we'd go out about 20 miles or so. Mm. And, it was fun stuff. But the thing with the Mako is we'd chum them, you get them up to the boats, and then you'd have a big bloody hunk of mackerel and go, here, boy.
Fetch.
Yeah. Toss it out to them, and then let them take it, and then idle away from them and get maybe 100 yards away.
Really?
Before you set the hook. What? Because when you set the hook, quite often they'll come out of the water like 20 feet in the air going end over end.
Oh, wow. How
and
fun.
And this is a fish that may weigh any place 800 to 1,000 pounds, and you don't Jeez. Want him landing the boat with you.
No,
you
know? That's a bad idea there, yeah.
I think it kind of came down on the boys out there catching sharks. The media did, and it was a kind of a bad deal. They had a little TV show going at one time. And, And all of a sudden, you know.
The thing is, the great thing about Makos is they are absolutely delicious.
Yeah.
They are as good as a, you know, like a swordfish.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they're wonderful fish to eat. Hmm. And, yeah.
I remember your crew a little bit. I met them while I was out there, and they're all actors.
Yeah.
Every one of them. Yeah. Unemployed actors.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, in fact, my old buddy that was a big-time shark fisherman, his claim to fame, you remember the old movie Missouri Breaks?
Sure.
He was the guy that, as the credits are still rolling, that they hang in the movie.
That was him, huh?
Yeah, his total lines were, the guy says, well, shall you, he's got a rope around his neck. He said, will you start the horse or shall I, son? And he said, I will, sir. That was his lines.
That was it.
That fits right in with you, yeah.
I'd like to go back and see those guys again.
Oh, yeah, good bunch. Yeah. You know, I mean, a great bunch of guys.
About
and they
crazy.
Like to get out there. We used to fish the tournaments and all that. Uh-huh. They'd have Mako tournaments.
Yeah.
And, in fact, we caught the, at that time, the third largest Mako that had ever been caught off the West Coast.
Wow.
But we got into the scales too late in the tournament.
Oh.
And the weight didn't count.
How much? How big was it?
Weighed 815 pounds, I believe.
My God.
Nice fish. Was huge. That'd be a good crappie, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'll straighten your string out.
Yeah, I got him up to the. We got him up the boat, and me and another guy are back there with flying gaffs to gaff him. And the one guy missed. I got my gaff in it, and of course it tore it out of my hands. But it's on a big rope, you know, up to the head. And he's twisting and turning and took off and straightened the gaff head out.
Oh my gosh! Wow!
Don't do that no more. Ted, thank you for coming in and enjoyed
a treat,
doing the show with you. It was fun, you know, what the hey.
Oh, well, me too. You guys, anytime. I'd love it.
Yeah. Brought to you by Reed Chevrolet. Go buy one today. Frederick, I-29, the greatest people in America that you can buy a vehicle from. And I mean that from my heart. Had a nice talk with Trevin yesterday. What good people. I can't say enough good things about Reed Chevrolet. And they're getting some inventory. Not very much, like all Chevrolet dealers are shut down. Ford shut down. All of them are shut down. But please go by and drop your hat in there, and you'll giggle. Be friends with them first. That's what I would recommend.
Non-commissioned salespeople make it such a treat to buy a vehicle.
Yep. Got to go for this week. Boy, this was fun. Ted, thank you.
Yeah, go to Walmart and get a Hatfield shotgun, man. They're priced right.
Good luck.
Yeah. Keep trying. It's worth the
keep
wait.
Keep trying. It's worth the wait.
I can't get one.
Yeah. Got to go for this week. Next time I see you, I hope I see you in a great outdoor.
Hey, happy Mother's Day to the mothers out there. So long, everybody.